Well, you may know that heart disease is the leading killer of men and women, but did you know that if you're exercising like crazy to stave it off, it doesn't matter if you then go sit in an office? In fact, people who don't exercise but move around at work burn many more calories than people who run 35 miles a week but then sit at a desk. And a cardiologist at the Mayo Clinic says sitting for more than 4 hours a day gives you the same risk of a heart attack as smoking. Okay, we probably have your attention, so let's spend a few minutes here today. Ron Winslow is Deputy Bureau Chief and Senior Writer for Health and Science at the Wall Street Journal. Ron, this sounds impossible that sitting, you know, even if you're running in the morning, is the same as smoking when it comes to heart disease?
It is kind of surprising, but there's a really bad biology of sedentary behavior, it turns out. It contributes to inflammation. It leads to lower levels of good cholesterol, and obviously can help build weight. It's not so much, I mean, if you're sitting for 4 hours, say 4 or 6 hours straight without getting up, I think is the problem. The message sort of is, if you are working in a situation where you're at your desk a lot, you know, get up every 30 minutes, take a walk. Instead of sending an email to a colleague across the room, just go over and have a conversation with him or her. So it's not devastating, but it is kind of a surprise that even if you get up in the morning, get on your treadmill for 30 minutes, and you think you've bought your exercise or done your exercise for the day, and then if you just go sit around and do almost nothing, you kind of unwound all of that benefit that you got in the morning.
Well, and this comes from many different sources. The University of Missouri had those stats we were talking about people who have non-exercise activity. You know, you work in a store and you stand up. You're moving more than someone at a desk. You burn more calories. And then there's Peter Katzmarzik. He's at Pennington, the country's leading obesity research center. He says people gain 16 pounds on average within 8 months of starting sedentary office work. And you looked into some research from Australian researchers. They published this about 2 years ago about people who spent time in front of computers and televisions. What did they find?
So they looked at about 8,800 people. They followed them for an average of 6 years. And those who watch TV for more than 4 hours a day were 46% more likely to die of any cause and 80% more likely to die of cardiovascular disease than those who reported spending less than 2 hours a day in front of the tube. It's one of those things you need to get up, you know, change the channel instead of hitting the remote, although I don't know if you can do that anymore with TVs.
Yeah, I'm not even sure you can. You mentioned the 30-minute workout. That is what scientists say should be your goal.
Right. Yeah. 30 minutes a day is sort of in the recommendations, two and a half to three and a half hours a week.
But then, as we've been hearing, just moving helps. So give us some of the stats. You write that 30-minute exercise target cuts your chances of having heart disease by about 70%. I mean, that's huge. But a 10-minute walk does what?
So a 10-minute walk actually reduces your risk for bad heart problems by about 50%.
That's amazing.
So essentially, I think a lot of us might see that 30 minutes a day thing, or, you know, got to do 3 or 4 hours a week. You've got a very busy schedule. You say, gee, you know what? I just can't get that in today. And you sort of take it on an all or nothing. If you can't hit the target, then you don't even try. And researchers at the Mayo Clinic sort of looked at the curve, which shows that 70-75% benefit of 30 minutes. You go midway down the curve and, you know, you still have a significant reduction in risk.
Yeah.
Don't want to be too overstate this too much, but that's measured against people who have very little activity. And it also, the biggest benefit is for the people who have the highest risk. So if you're a really active person regularly, I don't think you should, this isn't advice to cut back necessarily.
Right. So a brisk walk, 10 minutes a day, can still help cut your risk of heart disease by 50%, which isn't bad. And you mentioned, you know, some of the things that are recommended are getting up and going to talk to someone instead of sending an email. Some of us here have asked for stand-up desks. Some people are actually standing on treadmills at their desks. But even just a stand-up desk, just standing up, does that count as movement?
It does. Just getting up, the benefit begins. One of the doctors I talked to said she was in a hotel room, and I think had ironed a blouse or something and left the ironing board up. She came in had some work to do on her computer. Instead of sitting down at the desk, she set up the computer on the ironing board and stood up. She said, you know, 90 minutes later, she got all her work done and she was, you know, still upright. And, you know, you sort of think about building little strategies into your routine.
Well, let's move on to some of the other things you mentioned. You say there are two important indicators, and everybody should know their numbers on this: cholesterol, good and bad, and high blood pressure.
Correct. Ideally, your LDL cholesterol, which is the bad cholesterol, should be 100 or lower. If you're in really good health, it can be a little higher than that, but that would be the ideal target. Good cholesterol or HDL, you want to be above 40, and once you get it above 60, you get added benefit. And blood pressure, you want below 120 over 80.
Yeah, and we're not going to get into the different ways that you can bring those numbers down or up when it comes to the good cholesterol. But, you know, there's diet, of course, there's exercise, there's meditation, there's all sorts of things, and people can look into it, but those are the numbers. You know, you cite other stats that make us wonder what the concern is, because you say deaths from coronary heart disease in the U.S. have been cut by 75% in the last 40 years. Is that surprising to people? Because it feels like we might be moving less because we're sitting at computers.
Well, that's a good question. You know, we've had significant progress since the late 60s. And the first Surgeon General's report, which cited the hazards of smoking, came out in the early 60s. And so our death rate from coronary heart disease peaked at about 1968, and it's come down substantially since then. A big portion of that, people say, is for smoking. Mm-hmm. There is a significant part of the population that at least works harder on both on diet and exercise. We have also had some pretty remarkable medications developed over the past two or three decades that have helped mitigate that risk, although every doctor will tell you that your first line of defense is a healthy, right, healthy living style. But so all these things are among the contributors to this. And another thing that's been kind of interesting is the American Heart Association, the American College of Cardiology, some of the groups like Kaiser Permanente have established these guideline programs where you have a protocol of things that you follow, where doctors do. If you get admitted to a hospital with a heart problem, there's a whole protocol that kicks in, which includes working on how to prevent the next one. And so heart attack admissions have gone down substantially in the last decade. And a lot of people think it's just people are looking at the science and following it better.
We're speaking with Ron Winslow. He's Deputy Bureau Chief and Senior Writer for Health and Science at the Wall Street Journal. His story is titled The Guide to Beating a Heart Attack. He's aggregated all the new research. And Ron, you were just saying that guidelines that are in place for dealing with people who've had heart problems are just one of the reasons hospitals are seeing fewer heart attack victims in the last decade. But you also point out that there are fewer heart attacks among the elderly. Now, that number's fallen by nearly 25% in the last few years. And that's where experts were worried that there'd be almost a tsunami of heart attacks because we have such a large elder population. But they've thankfully not had as many heart attacks.
Right. And that's where some of this guideline work has come in. But, you know, the worry now is that with obesity so prevalent in society, with the rise in diabetes, which is a huge risk factor for heart attack and stroke, that that a lot of this progress that we have made is in jeopardy of being reversed.
Well, we might be seeing that in another stat. While heart attacks are going down among the elderly, they're going up among the young, according to a cardiologist and chief of preventive medicine at Northwestern, Donald Lloyd-Jones. You spoke with him as well. Why are there more heart attacks in people in their 20s and 30s?
This does relate to the rise of diabetes and obesity. It's long been known that coronary disease, the disease that leads to heart attacks, the buildup of fatty deposits in the walls of your blood vessels, begins at an early age, in adolescence, if not earlier. There's great concern about our diets and our lack of physical activity at that age that's leading to sort of an acceleration of the development of disease in earlier and earlier. So there's not really much data on that, but I was kind of surprised by the comment from Dr. Lloyd-Jones. He said every cardiologist he talks to has sort of made the observation that suddenly some younger and younger people are showing up in the hospitals with a heart attack.
Well, but then some of the other stats for those, you know, trying to prevent a heart attack: within a year of quitting smoking, a former smoker's heart attack risk is reduced by 50%. cut it right in half. Knowing your stats, like your cholesterol and blood pressure, is good to also track how you're doing, if it's going up or going down, which is another way to try to control this. But what about genetics? I mean, aren't there people, no matter what they do, they're going to have markers, genetic markers for heart attacks?
It is one of the, I suppose, conundrums of medicine. I mean, we all know people who don't take care of themselves at all and seem to dodge every bullet that comes their way. And there are people who take care of themselves intensely, and they have a problem. They have a heart attack. So genetics is a part of it. A lot of people also think it's the interaction of genetics and environment. Nevertheless, there is quite a lot you can do, even if you've drawn a bad hand genetically, to stave off the risk or stave off a heart attack. And again, you just sort of have to take a little bit of extra care and making sure you're taking care of yourself.
A woman who identified herself as an emergency room physician of 23 years wrote a comment after your article in the Wall Street Journal, and she said, 75% of the heart attacks that I care for are patients who are smokers or obese. She said, yes, there are people who have unlucky genes. They've done everything right. They still have a heart attack, but they're the exception. The rule is people who are smokers or obese. Now, we're not saying that obesity isn't also genetic on occasion, or even addiction to smoking may not have some genetic component. But it sounds as if, you know, those are two things that people can do something. She's saying those are two things people can do something about.
I think the really big issue a lot of people are focusing on is intervening at a very early age. People who develop obesity in their teens or earlier, or in very young adults, it's very hard biology to reverse. And so the real best strategy is to prevent this from happening at the beginning, because it really takes on a life of its own.
Well, and we want to touch on one last thing that you discovered in your research. If you want to fight heart disease, apparently you should smile. You say this is kind of shaky science, but tell us about the baseball player research.
Sure. So there was some research from Wayne State University, where people looked at a collection of baseball photographs in a publication called Baseball Digest, I believe it was, who played before 1950. So they had all these photographs and they assembled them and they looked to see how long they lived. And they categorized them by whether there were smiling faces, whether there was sort of a partial smile, and whether there was a broad smile. The broader your smile, the longer you lived after those photographs were taken. And as I said, it's not the best, most rigorous science you could imagine, but it does, it is supported, or it does reflect other research that shows if you're a happy person, if you have an optimistic outlook, if you have a purpose in your life, your risk of a heart disease is lower. Even with the good outlook and you happen to get heart disease, it doesn't progress as fast or you recover sooner.
Well, and we know that the opposite is true, that if you are hostile or angry, you can feel it in your heart. You can feel it.
For sure. Yeah, and there's some pretty interesting data around that, too. If doctors, this is a study at Duke a number of years ago, but doctors who scored high on a hostility scale or on an anger scale were much more likely to die after 25 years than doctors who scored, on a much lower on that scale. So, yeah, I mean, that almost makes sense. You can sort of feel it sometimes if you're constantly angry or constantly at odds with the world. I mean, there's a lot of stress involved in that, it's not good for your blood pressure, it's not good for lots of things.
Right. So. Well, Ron Winslow, Deputy Bureau Chief for Health and Science at the Wall Street Journal, I must go because I'm going to get on my treadmill in front of my computer and grin.
There you go.
Try to offset all this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.